Senator, let's visit. First of all, kind of reflecting on some of the news of the week, the announcement from the Air Force on the Fufeng project in Grand Forks. Do you see this has some kind of longer legs dealing with foreign ownership of farmland, those kind of things?
I don't think there's any question. In fact, when I talk to people in the intelligence community, the defense community, the security community in general, and by that I mean not just the agencies, but my colleagues, Republicans, Democrats alike, Fufeng became a bit of a flashpoint, but it's duplicated several places around the country. And I don't think there's any doubt that there's been a evolution of opinion, if you will, about China. China's earned that evolution of opinion people raising more and more concerns about China's role in critical supply chains, certainly food being among them. So now I think this was one example. And for that, I credit the activists at the local level that really made Grand Forks sort of the epicenter of a larger global debate. I mean, just today in a meeting that the Armed Services Committee had with King Abdullah and the Crown Prince from Jordan, everyone's asking about Israel and the Palestinians and Syria, and I asked about China, and because China has tentacles everywhere. So it is a global discussion, Don, and I don't think there's any question of what happened, what the Air Force did, and I wish they'd have done it sooner, although I believe that was always their opinion. They just were hoping that it would be figured out at the local level. I think you're going to see a much more aggressive approach in pushing back against Chinese investment throughout the country.
China's certainly a big player, though, when it comes to buying agricultural products. Do we find a balance with that?
Yeah, I think balance is the word we always have to seek. The thing is, we cannot be as naive as we've been for the last couple of decades as China's malign influence has grown and their ability to spy, their patience to influence behavior, collect data. I mean, they really are long game thinkers, and they have the luxury of an emperor for life, so they don't have to worry about these pesky elections and the people. And I wouldn't trade for all the money in the world. But to your point, China has about 1.5 billion people, and near as I can tell, they eat about three times a day, and we grow a lot of stuff that they like and that their livestock likes, and we want to be able to sell obviously to people. And I think we just have to realize that, it comes at a cost, and we have to be much more diligent about how we do business with China.
One of the other stories happening as we speak is the discussion over the debt ceiling. Yes. President Biden's kind of dug in his heels about even negotiating on any spending cuts. How do you move forward when the administration takes that position?
Yeah, it's really unfortunate because it demonstrates a lack of leadership, quite honestly. But at the same time, I don't think anybody believes that that's going to be their ending negotiating position. I often say if your starting negotiating position is all or nothing, that's fine. But if it's your ending negotiating position, it's usually nothing. And I would hope that they're smart enough to know better than that. The problem with it is that because we've really already hit the ceiling, it's just because of extraordinary measures. That, in other words, there's a lot of movement, or really more withholding of paying certain things that allows the Treasury Department to extend this for a few months. It that does not come without a cost either, and the uncertainty that it creates comes at a cost because markets get skittish and nervous. Investors obviously get nervous. Farmers get nervous. You just don't know what the future is going to hold. So I think it's an irresponsible position, and I don't think you'll hang on to it long. I just can't imagine that they see a high ground to that position. When we do get there, there have been some ground rules that have already been laid down both by the Biden administration and by Speaker McCarthy, and that is that they're taking the Social Security and Medicare off the table. That's okay for the time being, but we should not be so naive as to lie to the American people that we're going to balance our budget without dealing with what's more than two-thirds of the federal budget deficit and debt, and that is, of course, the mandatory side of the ledger.
switching gears over to regulation, WOTUS back in our headlines. What's this mean for North Dakota? What are you hearing from your constituents?
Yeah, so the thing I hear the most, Don, is that, oh, boy, here we go again. You know, we all like roller coasters, except the roller coasters like WOTUS and the changing, you know, with every administration. And the lack of certainty, again, you know, similar to the debt ceiling, the ever-changing WOTUS rule creates uncertainty, which creates nervousness. The problem with the rule now, as I see it, is we have a Supreme Court case pending. They've already heard the case. They'll be ruling on the case, on the Hackett case. And it just makes no sense to me to try to find an enduring or a rule that's comes before that case, because that case is going to help, and the outcome of that case is going to help determine something going forward. The other thing is it's certain to be litigated itself, the new rule. So I think they just missed missed an opportunity to do something that would be more enduring. They continue to hang on to language like a significant nexus, which is, of course, the term of art that Justice Kennedy used as the middle vote in a previous WOTUS Supreme Court order. And that significant nexus, of course, is too ambiguous, and it's proven to be too ambiguous. So we'll have to see how it turns out. I feel for farmers and landowners, particularly, and developers of all types, but to be left in this limbo again, to be part of a ping-pong, you know, game between political entities, really unfortunate. And I do hope before the next couple of years are done that the Supreme Court of the United States provides some prescription to the problem.
Of course, it's a farm bill year. Your take, you think we'll get this thing wrapped up in 23?
Well, if the commodity groups and farm groups are any indication, it won't be for lack of effort. I mean, they have hit the ground running. It's so great to be us. I say that a lot, but to have the type of access we have to all the farm groups, the commodity groups, I do see a big challenge, Don. I worry a lot about it. As you know, I came into Congress 10 years ago after a farm bill got extended 1 year, and then the first thing we did is failed to pass a farm bill. Now, fortunately, we rebounded within a month or so and got one passed, but they're getting more difficult all the time. And right now, we've already complicated it because of some of the legislation last year that was passed through budget reconciliation with straight party line votes, added a lot of money on the conservation side of what would otherwise be part of the farm bill. And the conservation title is an important title, obviously, to farmers, but $20 billion went in there off the books. I worry that changes the formula. Anything you do, the farm bill is so intricate and it's so, as you know, so fragile. It's so carefully negotiated that I do worry a little bit about the areas of the farm bill that are by far the smallest part of the farm bill. Of course, the price supports, the safety net, crop insurance, that for real conservative members, particularly in the House, I worry that they see that as a bit of a pay for in trying to get the budget lower, because it's not a very big part of the farm bill, but it's still a big chunk of money. And yet, for us, it's what's really important. I think with inflation, the input costs that have dramatically increased, and granted, there have been some commodity costs that have also increased, but they've not kept up. And certainly workforce shortage, which means extra labor challenges, and that adds to the cost of getting a crop in and off. I just think we're going to have to raise some of those reference, those prices, and make sure that crop insurance is adequately funded. So I am worried, because I think the balance between those that want to put more money on the nutrition side and the conservation side, competing with those of us that care about growing enough food to feed a hungry world and supporting that family farmer, that's one part of the battle. But when you throw in that mix, people on the far right who would just like to cut it all, we're going to have a challenge. So, status quo isn't quite enough. So an extension, I'd prefer to avoid. This is why we're here. Roll up our sleeves and do something that has to get done.
This is unique. It's the first farm bill that's going to be written post-pandemic, where we've actually had food shelves that were, you know, supermarket food shelves empty, the meat case empty in some cases. Will that memory be with us, and food security be a part of the discussion?
So, Don, that is such a great question, because at the end of it, that's everything. I mean, it's why farmers farm. Well, granted, they farm to make a living, and they love the work, and they love the heritage of it all. But their job is to grow enough food to feed a growing population in the world. And in many cases, that's getting harder and harder to do. So food security has got to be, I think, the battle cry. When you consider how many more people eat food than grow food, and the level of naivety to ignorance of how food is actually produced continues to escalate, you really do have to find other ways to talk about it and ways to touch people so that they understand why it matters. And this is why it's heartwarming, really. It sounds almost corny, but to be able to have the sugar growers in town this week, to have the wheat growers, the grain growers in town this week, talking to Farm Bureau, Farmers Union, and have that cycle begin. They're all part of the messaging, every single one of them. And that doesn't mean just with your own delegation. That means being able to go to other offices and share the important story of food security and feeding hungry people. And I think we can all agree that that should be a high priority.
Of course, North Dakota is an energy state with oil and coal. For ag, that's important as well, with ethanol and the soy crush plants we're putting on. That's really part of that energy story as well. At the same time, the administration's been pushing the climate agenda. What does that mean as far as a state like North Dakota?
Well, it makes us vulnerable for sure, but it also, I think, presents again the opportunity to tell the story in the terms that people who are concerned about climate can appreciate. I mean, those crushing plants in North Dakota are part of the solution to greenhouse gas emissions. They provide the opportunity, the feedstock, of course, for renewable fuels. So, I think it gets back to messaging and marketing the issue. And our farmers have been growing food and fiber and fuel, of course, for decades and centuries. They've done it well, and they do it better than anybody else. And frankly, they do it with the least amount of carbon intensity probably of any farmers in the world, particularly when you consider how much they produce and how many people they feed. So I just think, again, it gets back to telling their story. But that doesn't mean that the attack isn't always on. There are people who don't like agriculture. They like to eat. They just don't like farming. They think cows fart too much, and they think that tractors spew too much greenhouse gases. They come up with ways, of course, for landowners and farmers to actually participate in the storage of carbon. Good idea. Carbon is pretty good plant food. So if it's grasslands or whatever the case might be, we just want to make sure that speaking of the Farm Bill, that projects like that, that ideas like that are voluntary for the farmer, that they're not punitive, that they actually, the incentives would be appropriate so that people can voluntarily participate in the climate challenge without killing their own personal economy.
I want to be cognizant of your time. I sure appreciate the chance to sit down.
It's always my pleasure. I love it when you come out here, and obviously having the commodity groups, some of them in town, making the rounds, it's like a campaign in and of itself. It's pretty great.